from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
What's so appalling is the top four prosecutors took their secret documents with them when they left office. Now, they shouldn't have done it. These are government documents. And they've slowly surfaced just in the past few years.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. And that's Jeff Shepard, author of the new book, The Nixon Conspiracy, Watergate and the Plot to Remove the President. We'll hear more from Jeff a little bit later on in the program. Our first guest on today's program is Dr. Kevin Porteous, professor of politics and director of American Studies here at Hillsdale College. With talk about the president's massive Build Back Better program still simmering, we look back to another massive expansion of government from a previous president, the Great Society, and Lyndon B. Johnson. And Dr. Porteous actually teaches part of an online course, Constitution 201, specifically on this subject. If you want to go and find out more, we'll give you what we have today. Dr. Porteous, so when we talk about the Great Society and LBJ's Great Society, what do we mean when we refer to it?
Well, the Great Society was Lyndon Johnson's vision for the country. And this is something George H.W. Bush talked about, the vision thing. And that was a common perception or understanding that if you were going to be a successful president, you had to have a vision of how you were going to transform the society. And so, you know, in the 20th century, you've had Theodore Roosevelt and his new nationalism, Wilson and the new freedom. You have the New Deal, the Fair Deal, the New Frontier, the Great Society with Lyndon Johnson, and sort of so on down the line. There's always this perception that we need to transform society. And this was Johnson's way of doing it. This was his vision and his package of policies that went along with that vision, which was designed, in his understanding, not just to make us wealthier or to distribute wealth more equitably in order to solve the problems of poverty or anything else, but to really transform the quality of American life in a fundamental way.
LBJ's programs, his ideas for the Great Society, what were the theoretical foundations of the Great Society?
Okay, so Johnson's idea was that the starting point, and he lays much of this out in his Great Society speech at the University of Michigan in 1964, the foundations were an end to racial injustice, so civil rights, that was important to Johnson, and an end to poverty, which gives us the war on poverty, because that's just the start. We want to give people, and I think this is part of what was so radical about the Great Society, where it really departed from its New Deal moorings. We want to use government to guarantee the good life to people. And by that, he did not mean a particular standard of living, but he talked about spiritual fulfillment and satisfying the longings of the soul and the desire for beauty and the hunger for community were phrases that he used. I mean, he really thought, or at least he put forward a program or a vision that government could do this for the American people, that we had reached a point where we were so prosperous and so civilized and so advanced that we could literally deliver these goods for the average person.
So you get to this point, I think, which is President Johnson seemingly wanting to guarantee happiness for Americans instead of allowing for what we would, you know, we always hear the pursuit of happiness. This is like a guarantee of happiness. That is the goal of the Great Society. Is that an appropriate or even a possible goal for a government to make when they talk about setting policies?
I think it's really useful that you bring up the idea of happiness versus the pursuit of happiness. That's incredibly useful to understand. If you look at the Declaration of Independence, happiness is the one right in the list that the founders don't guarantee that government can provide. The government can secure your life reasonably well, they can secure your liberty, but they can only secure to you the ability to pursue happiness. And I think that was because of the perception that was widely held that ultimate happiness, your permanent long-term good, is something that cannot be secured in this life, on this plane of existence. And they had learned, particularly looking at the course of European history, that the attempt to guarantee happiness on the part of government was both an elusive goal and a tyrannical one, because you can't guarantee happiness without smashing everybody into that exact mold. In other words, it would require tyrannical power on the part of the government in order to achieve that. And so it's no coincidence that it's with the Great Society in the 1960s that you see the real intrusion, way beyond anything that you see in the New Deal, of the administrative state into the individual person's life. And I think it's also not a surprise that it's in the 1960s that you start to get intense, growing popular cynicism about government. And I think the reason for that is fairly simple. Look at what Johnson is promising. He's promising people things that bureaucracy, centralized government, cannot possibly deliver. And so it's inevitably going to fail. Not only is it going to be tyrannical, it's going to be unsuccessful. And so as government continues to make ever more grandiose promises about what it can do for us, people start to notice the disconnect between promise and reality, and I think that breeds cynicism about government.
Dr. Kevin Porteous with us, Professor of Politics, Director of American Studies here at Hillsdale College on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. You mentioned a little earlier this phrase, the war on poverty, which comes from LBJ's Great Society. Was the war on poverty, which I guess in essence really continues today, a success in any real meaningful way? And what is its legacy today?
Well, the war on poverty is a great example of the expansiveness of Lyndon Johnson's program. That is to say, previous anti-poverty programs, whether they were of the localized variety that some founding fathers proposed, like Thomas Jefferson, whether they were of the private charity variety, or even what you find in the Progressive Era and the New Deal. Whatever Franklin Roosevelt's larger vision, the actual programs he put forward were geared towards the amelioration or the mitigation of poverty. There's a recognition that you're going to have poor people, but we want to install a kind of baseline of economic security that we're not going to let people fall below. I think that the Great Society is different. The war on poverty is different because Johnson says explicitly in announcing the war on poverty, he says, our objective is total victory. And I think what he means by that is we are now at the point, and he says this, we are now at the point in our wealth, in our prosperity, in our progress in civilization, where we can not just ameliorate poverty, we can eliminate it. We can change the way human beings have lived since human beings have lived. In other words, poverty has always been with us, but Johnson says it doesn't have to be with us anymore. And if you think about that, that's incredibly radical because it means transforming the human condition. It means changing the way that human beings interact with reality, undoing thousands of years of human experience through centralized government programs. And I think that this manifests itself in the programs that he creates. So it's job training programs, it's urban renewal programs, it's economic opportunity and community action programs. Johnson is not trying to mitigate the effects of poverty. His programs strike at the causes of poverty. And I think that if you want to judge whether or not Johnson's programs have succeeded, just look at the welfare rolls, look at the attitude of people who are, in many cases, not every case, but of people who are receiving these benefits and what it does to their character to be on welfare and living at the expense of others for years, decades, generationally. I mean, that's a huge transformation, and it's incredibly problematic in terms of preserving the virtues necessary for self-government.
If you want to learn more, the Constitution 201 class has a specific course taught by Dr. Kevin Porteous on LBJ's Great Society, online.hillsdale.edu. Dr. Kevin Porteous, Professor of Politics, Director of American Studies here at Hillsdale College, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Up next, Jeff Shepard. His new book is The Nixon Conspiracy. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. From all of us here on the program and from Hillsdale College, we wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We're joined now by Jeff Shepherd. He's the author of the new book, The Nixon Conspiracy, Watergate and the Plot to Remove the President. He also served 5 years on the Nixon White House staff, including as Associate Director of Domestic Counsel. He was Deputy Counsel of Nixon's Watergate Defense Team. You can find out more at the website, shepherdonwatergate.com. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on, Scott.
You've written a few books previously on similar subjects. And, Jeff, of most importance for the new book, The Nixon Conspiracy, is you have found some new information. You have found some new documents, in fact.
What's so appalling, Scott, is the top four prosecutors took their secret documents with them when they left office. Now, they shouldn't have done it. These are government documents. And they've slowly surfaced just in the past few years. So my first book was really the Archie Cox and the original prosecutors. The second, that surfaced in 2008, but Leon Jaworski took his, he was the second special prosecutor. He took his stuff with him when he left in 1974, and the materials didn't surface till 2013. And since then, I've uncovered three more caches of documents. So this book, the Nixon Conspiracy, really focuses on what they did to President Nixon and how they misrepresented both to the grand jury and to the Hill facts that they said would cause the Judiciary Committee to impeach Nixon and the Senate to convict him. But their facts were wrong. They did this in secret. There's this very famous report. It was a secret grand jury report, and it became nicknamed the Roadmap. And what the prosecutors said was, we've gathered all this evidence against Nixon, but we've decided it's not appropriate to indict a sitting president. The law is too unclear, so we're going to give it to the Hill, and they can impeach him. This will lead to Nixon's impeachment. But since it's grand jury evidence, we can't make it public. So they sent this secret report. It was public that they sent it, but the report was secret. So those of us on Nixon's defense team had no idea what he was accused of.
Jeff Shepherd is with us. The Nixon Conspiracy is the new book, Watergate and the Plot to Remove the President. I've seen you speak, Jeff, and you say that there are three definite truths here, that there was a break-in, there was a cover-up, and the president did resign, and everything in between is hazy.
It's amazing, Scott. Everything in between, you can't believe what you've been told. I mean, we know there was a break-in. They were caught red-handed. And we know there was a cover-up because people were trying to deny they knew about the break-in in advance, and some pretty senior people were at risk. So they ran the cover-up. There's no question about that. The question is, who knew? Who was involved? And that's where specially recruited prosecutors overreached. And they decided who they wanted to bag, who they wanted to accuse, and they indicted them on the flimsiest of evidence. And those folks didn't get fair trials. Nixon not only resigned in disgrace, but 24 members of his administration were convicted and imprisoned.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't get the benefit of fair trials, and that's what my book does. And the Nixon Conspiracy, of course, was going after his top lieutenants, too. But what distinguishes my work, and this is something your listeners need to be aware of, mine is all document-based. I have uncovered dozens and dozens of documents from within the special prosecutor's own files that detail their wrongdoing.
Jeff, if there were a plot, and you now have these documents, people can find them too. ShepherdOnWatergate.com is a place to find the links. In your research, can you begin to point fingers here? Meaning, is there someone or some agency in particular you can say that this is where it began, this is where it came from, this is the person spearheading, organizing this plot? Can you do that?
Yes, I can. the person who is primarily responsible for the Watergate problem is, of course, John Dean. He's the one, he's the president's lawyer. He recruited and hired Gordon Liddy. Gordon Liddy conducted the break-in, and he's just an out-and-out crook. But Dean hired him, worked with him in developing the plan, and was at meetings where that plan was discussed with very senior people. So Dean ran the cover-up to protect himself. And then when it failed, and it should have failed, Scott, when the cover-up failed, Dean said, oh, all these other people on Nixon's staff, they were with me on this. There was a conspiracy, and I'm the only one that can show you. And then he teamed up with these specially recruited prosecutors who were all ardent Nixon haters, and they made him into a hero, and they went and targeted prosecutions of Nixon's senior people, and the press played its role. You know, in that era, there was only one point of view. There was a uniform press, three networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS, two national newspapers, the New York Times and the Washington Post, and two weekly news magazines, Time and Newsweek. And it was one point of view. And what they did was just this drumbeat of driving Nixon down and printing rumor and innuendo and not following up on any lead that would contradict their narrative.
Final question for Jeff Shepard. His new book is The Nixon Conspiracy, Watergate, and the Plot to Remove the President. Jeff, you've recently filed an official complaint of attorney misconduct with the Department of Justice, again, almost 50 years after Watergate. Why is that important? Why is what you've uncovered still important now, so far after the fact?
Well, one, because if you don't learn from the past, you'll repeat it in the present. And what this stuff shows is the criminalization of politics didn't start recently. It actually was going on 50 years ago, and we can prove it. Those documents have come to light recently. But what's delicious is that complaint of attorney misconduct. Turns out the Department of Justice, because federal prosecutors have such incredible power and the wide discretion they're given of who to charge and what to charge them with, the Department of Justice has its own internal affairs unit. It was established right after Watergate, but its role is to investigate allegations of misconduct by Department of Justice attorneys. That's its only responsibility. And it's called the Office of Professional Responsibility. Well, I learned about it about 3 weeks ago, right about the time the book was coming out. And, of course, I just documented all this wrongdoing in the book. And here comes this opportunity, which I took immediately, to file a formal complaint with the Department of Justice about the conduct of these specially recruited prosecutors.
Jeff Shepard, The Nixon Conspiracy, Watergate, and the Plot to Remove the President. You can find that book all over the place and the website shepherdonwatergate.com. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Scott, it's a pleasure for you to have me on. Thank you so much.
Up next, Dr. Paul Ray from Hillsdale's History Department will take us through the life and thinking of Machiavelli. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Take a stroll down Memory Lane at Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage. Whether you're looking for tools from the past, vintage clothing, collectibles, jewelry, or something that just reminds you of the good old days, you can find it at Memory Lane. Those special shabby chic and vintage style items are seen in every nook and cranny. So what are you waiting for? Sure, you can check out their Facebook page, but it's a lot more fun to explore the past and find your treasure. 1665 Pine Street in Reading. Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage.
Do you have a friend that won't shut up about crypto? Are you interested but don't know where to go? What is Web3? How does it affect me? Who benefits from DeFi? Is one crypto best? Why? There's so much to know. Get answers with Tokens Radio Show. Connect with us on Telegram at t.me/tokensradioshow or tokensradioshow.com.
Sunday afternoons from 2 to 3. Save room for a wish this month at Black Bear Diner, where they partnered with Make-A-Wish to help grant life-changing wishes for children with critical illnesses in our community. They're donating $1 from the purchase of every delicious slice of red velvet cake, candy cane chocolate cream pie, and peppermint cheesecake now through the end of the month. Get on over to Black Bear Diner because wishes need stars like you. Open daily, including Christmas Eve and day. 2605 Hilltop Drive.
Black Bear Diner.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
Hi. My name's Nick Gardner. I have a show here on KCNR, Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. every other Sunday. The name of my show is Poke the Hornet's Nest.
There's no mountain I can't climb. There's no tower too high. No plane that I can't learn how to fly. What do I gotta do to get through to you to show you there ain't nothing I can't take this chainsaw to?
I'm going to concentrate on local politics mainly, but we'll talk about national politics also. You'll get the view of the common citizen here in Redding, California. And remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Maybe it's a good time for a new perspective about what's been going on in our town, in our state, in our nation. I hope you tune in and hear the other side of the news.
Everybody, listen up!
100 years ago, Simpson University began with a promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Redding with a promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Building on our foundational promise to educate ministers and missionaries, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Learn more about Redding's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
Hi, this is Dr. Patricia Bay, and my radio show, Therapy in a Nutshell, which airs on Saturdays at 11 a.m., on KCNR, 1460 AM, or 96.5 FM, is a great show for you to listen to and learn how to effectively change your life. We talk about issues such as communication and trust, couples issues, and many more. Also, you can listen to the radio show on my podcast through the Anchor app, which is free and safe, or you can tune into the iTunes or Spotify podcast and listen to it there. It's a nice show that'll help you throughout the day and throughout your life. So join me for Therapy in a Nutshell, Saturdays, 11 a.m. at KCNR Radio. This is Dr. Patricia Bay, trying to heal the world 1 hour at a time.
You get me every time.
Hi, this is Matt with Liberty Unabashed, a show on every other Sunday, 8 to 9. Are you awake? Do you know what I'm talking about? Do you realize you're in an information war where we're losing our country? It's time to stand up and defend your freedoms, my brothers and sisters. Americans don't care what color you are. Those of the past do.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. For more information about Hillsdale College for prospective students, for friends of Hillsdale, or alumni, head to hillsdale.edu. We're joined by Dr. Paul Ray, Professor of History, and Charles O. Lee and Louise K. Lee, Chair in the Western Heritage at Hillsdale College. Dr. Ray, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you again.
We perhaps introduce people, or at least give them more information on a great figure, Machiavelli, in today's conversation. Who was Machiavelli? When was he alive? What did he do?
Well, he was a Florentine. He came from a leading family, not top tier, but say second tier. It was a family with some money. He's always complaining about poverty, but it's not what you would call poverty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he never has to work with his hands. He has a modest income, and it's a competence. It's sufficient. He's born in 1469. He dies, I believe, in 1527. He is born in Florence at a time when it's close to its high point. This is a commercial city, a mercantile city in Italy. So you've got artisans, you have bankers, there are many bankers, the Medici being the most famous. It's a period of Medici domination. There is one very successful banking family that has managed to, it's kind of like Chicago, put the fix into the political system.
Yeah.
And from behind the scenes, they run just about everything. And then a calamity takes place when he is 23. There is a French invasion of Italy, and there's nothing to stop the French. The Italian cities are mostly commercial in character. They're not especially martial. There are lots of soldiers in Italy, but they're mercenaries.
Mm.
Mercenaries aren't going to stand up to the French army. And, one wag said the French conquered Italy with chalk. And they used the chalk to mark the houses where their officers would stay. And Florence succumbs. And the Medici are tossed out. And you have a period in which, from behind the scenes, a Dominican monk named Savonarola runs the city. For about 4 years. Machiavelli is witness to this and fascinated. And at one level, Savonarola is a rebel, a forerunner of Martin Luther, you know, who comes along not so very many of 20, 25 years later. And Savonarola will give a sermon in the morning, and it'll be sold on the streets in the afternoon, and it'll be reprinted in Lyon, in France, within a week. And then it will circulate throughout Europe.
Dr. Ray, what do we know about Machiavelli's upbringing? What do we know about his schooling?
As I said, we don't know much. We know a little bit about his upbringing. His father was a humanist and trained as a lawyer. And his father's best friend was the chancellor of the Florentine Republic under the Medici, a bit longer, even under Savonarola. Though the family, he's not filthy rich the way he'd like to be, they're well off enough that they don't really have to work. On the other hand, they can't live at a very high level. And we know that he learned Latin at an early age, and we know that he learned it exceedingly well. We have reason to think he studied at the Florentine studio. This was what they had rather than a university. And we have his masterpiece, you know, that is to say, the sort of graduate thesis he did, which was a critical edition of the Lucretius's poem De Rerum Natura. In which he is correcting the Latin of the manuscripts. He then spends this period in which he is at the Second Chancery, and in theory he's responsible for the Florentine territorial state. In Tuscany they have conquered and absorbed a number of smaller communities, and they have to manage it. And he's the sort of civil servant in charge of that. He's also very interested in creating a militia, because one of the things learned in 1492 is Florence doesn't have its own army. And so he pushes that and pushes that and pushes that from his post, and finally persuades people, and he's put in charge of it. And it's actually a considerable success. Florence lost Pisa in 1492. It is Machiavelli's militia that brings Pisa back under Florence. But the other thing is, it turns out that he's clever, and so they use him on embassies. and he goes everywhere. And he writes reports back to the priors of the Florentine state. So you see his mind working in this, and you see why they are delighted to get reports from him, because he's always speculating, what does this mean? What's the larger meaning of this? And the people at the time were especially delighted with him. But there was unhappiness with him, too, because he was too big for his britches. The Medici come back in, and they fire him because he's been too political.
Dr. Paul Ray talking with us about Machiavelli. The Prince, this great work by Machiavelli. Give us a bit of the background behind it. Why does he decide to write The Prince?
He writes The Prince as a job application. It's the most famous job application ever written. And there's a wonderful letter that he writes in December 1512 about working on The Prince. He has a good friend. So he writes Machiavelli a letter about a day in his life. And it's about the food he eats and going to mass. And Machiavelli writes a letter back, a day in the life of me. And he is barred from the building of the Florentine chancery, except when they can't figure something out. And they call him in. So he's outside Florence in a farm, which still exists, and the house where he's writing this letter is still there. And the desk and the chair are still there, to describe a kind of simpler life than the gentleman in Rome is leading. And it ends with a description that, you know, at the end of his day, he changes his clothes and cleans himself up from the mud and mire of the day, and he puts on courtly robes. Now, this may be literal because, of course, he had to go to court many times, so he has that kind of clothing. And he sits down and he reads the books of the ancients. In order to sort of preserve what he has learned, he's writing a little thing called The Prince. And he wants to make a gift of it to one of the Medici, whom he had grown up with. They're the same age, roughly, and they've known each other since childhood. And they're all trained as humanists, these people at the top or at the second tier. It's the prince. And what he wants is a job as advisor to whoever's going to run Rome on behalf, run Florence on behalf of the Medici. It turns out not to be the person originally imagined, who had been close to Machiavelli, but the nephew of that person, the younger Lorenzo de' Medici. And so the dedication is changed. And it is given to him, and there is a story, makes perfect sense. Guy receives it, throws it on a pile. Someone else brings him a brace of hunting dogs. He's much more interested in hunting dogs. Machiavelli does not get the job. The book begins to circulate in manuscript. It's not published in print until the 1530s, and it's published in Rome with papal imprimatur. But it circulates all through Europe in manuscript.
Dr. Ray will pause right there. We'll come back after the break and talk a bit more about the life and times of Machiavelli. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Alan Gordon, Coach Master Auto Body. The auto repair industry is ever-changing, just like the automobile. Collision repair on today's vehicles requires an extensive investment in diagnostic equipment and training. The ability to scan the safety and electronic control systems after a collision is imperative. Coachmaster has made these investments. We have the technology. You can be assured that after a Coachmaster repair, your vehicle will be back to pre-loss condition. Upon delivery, your vehicle will be washed, vacuumed, and disinfected.
Remember Coachmaster on Eastside Road, serving the Reading community since 1969. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
With the coming of the holiday season, we would like to thank all of our customers, old and new, for trusting Coachmaster to take care of all of your collision repair needs. Our team would like to wish the community Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And Santa, we don't repair sleighs, so be careful. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Turn your someday into today. The Shasta College spring semester begins January 19th, and now's the time to register for classes. First-time, full-time students. Get your first 2 years tuition free. At Shasta College, we'll teach you the skills, give you the knowledge, and provide the training you need to unlock your potential. Reskill, upskill, or get transfer ready at Shasta College. Go to www.shastacollege.edu/apply.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
Greetings to my fellow veterans. This is Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of Veterans Affairs for the state of California. I'm a Korean vet, and it's my honor to serve in the U.S. Army as a new immigrant to this great country. Thank you for your service. It will not be forgotten. It should be remembered that freedom is not free. It has been secured by brave sacrifice that all members of our military and their families have given since the beginning of a great, wonderful nation. Thank you for your service.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. In response to COVID-19, NFI has scheduled online Zoom classroom sessions for CCW and CCW renewal. These online courses will be followed up with live fire range training, which will complete your certification. Follow-on range training is done with the same great instructors you've come to know and love. Give us a call today at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Hi, this is Matt. I'm your host of Liberty Unabashed, a new show on Sundays, 8 to 9. We're going to have some good music, some deep thought, and I hope you check us out.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. To get an email every time there's a new episode of the program, head to radiohour.hillsdale.edu and enter your email address. That's radiohour.hillsdale.edu. You can also find old episodes of the program there. We've been talking with Dr. Paul Ray, Professor of History, Charles O. Lee and Louise K. Lee Chair in the Western Heritage here at Hillsdale College, about Machiavelli. We had just talked about the writing of his book, The Prince. Dr. Ray, how does The Prince change politics?
Look, Machiavelli's little book marks a revolution in the way people think about politics. It's a direct assault on the notion that politics has to have a moral underpinning. It's written in a Christian context, so it's really an attack on Christianity in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes the form of a direct attack on Aristotle. Not mentioned by name, but it's very clear that the most famous chapter is chapter 15, and the title is lifted from Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics. Aristotle describes 11 virtues. Thomas Aquinas, following Aristotle, gives a list of 11 virtues, slightly modified in light of Christianity. Machiavelli gives a list of 11 virtues and vices, but he mixes them up in such a way that it's not clear what's a virtue and what's a vice. Is cruelty a virtue? Could be. And then he tells you, finally, that what seems to be virtue and what seems to be vice, with an emphasis on seems, must ultimately be decided in light of your own security and well-being. So, morality, what's moral is to get yours. So it's a new morality. So at the heart of the thing is a kind of fascination with tyranny. And tyranny in ancient Greece is a word for usurper. Tyrant's not a king. And so the new prince is his subject. But he has a rather grand view of the new princes. You know, who are the great ones? Moses, he says, taking the religious and turning it into the secular.
Mm-hmm.
Theseus, Romulus, Cyrus, and so forth. And it becomes clear if you read very carefully, Moses is a stand-in for Jesus. And at one point, talking about Savonarola, he says, no unarmed prince has ever succeeded. And you read it and you think, but wait, if Moses is a prince, Savonarola is a Christian. And he doesn't want to rule directly. Christ doesn't rule directly, talking about Moses, and he's not talking about Savonarola. He's talking about Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
who as an unarmed prince did succeed. And so he opens the question, what's he up to? And the answer is he's trying to replace Jesus Christ. And Christ succeeded through a book. Machiavelli wants to succeed in becoming the prince. Not the prince of peace, however, the prince of war.
Mm.
Through a book. So this, you know, civil servant, this bureaucrat, fired bureaucrat, has this grand ambition. And he'd have never had time to do this had he not failed as a bureaucrat, sure. had he not been fired. And then Machiavelli goes on, because he never gets a job, really, with the Medici. They eventually hire him, give him a stipend to be the Florentine state historian, and he produces a book called Florentine Histories. But that's not until considerably later.
Dr. Ray, we know about the prince. We've talked about the prince. What else does Machiavelli write in his lifetime?
In the interim, he writes a book called The Art of War, in which he is interested in the return of infantry as the dominant arm. Throughout the Middle Ages, cavalry's been the dominant arm. And he's interested in this for political reasons. The cavalry is an aristocratic arm because horses are very expensive,
mm-hmm.
and they don't give you much of anything back. You can use a horse to pull a plow, but that's not the kind of horse that cavalrymen need.
Right.
So when cavalry is predominant, the dominant force politically is going to be the aristocracy. Okay, just about the time that Machiavelli is born, the pikemen of Switzerland, where there is no aristocracy because it's too poor for any self-respecting aristocrat to be interested in, defeat the largest and finest army of knights ever assembled. And they defeat them maybe three times. It's assembled by Charles the Bold of Burgundy, who's more powerful than the King of France at that time. And they massacre these knights. And everybody in Europe takes notice and realizes infantry can defeat cavalry.
Hmm.
And so they pull together infantries. And Machiavelli writes a book about the military revolution that is taking place in his own time. And he's interested in it in part because it means the return of populist politics. Because infantry is going to be based upon the peasantry and large numbers of people and not rich people. So he started looking back to Greece and Rome, which were based on the same kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
thinking perhaps we can have a restoration of their politics. But a restoration of their politics without the kind of morality that comes out of Plato and Aristotle. He's thinking of something much, much, much harsher. And he writes another book called The Discourses on Livy. It purports to be a commentary on the first 10 books of Livy, so on very early Roman history. But it's quasi-independent work. It kind of takes off from there. And it envisages a new kind of republicanism. And it's a republicanism without morality. And one of the words that does not figure in Machiavelli's language in The Prince or in the Discourses on Livy is justice.
Hmm.
And it's not 100% absent, but it's basically absent. And another word that he never uses is the word soul. He uses the word spirit, but what he means is spiritedness
right. All
the time. And so he develops a new understanding of republicanism. Ancient Greek and ancient Roman republicanism was based upon the notion of civic morality and solidarity, harmony. Homonoia is the Greek word, concordia is the Latin word. And Machiavelli says, no, good politics comes from domestic conflict, which you have to channel. And if you channel that thing properly, you will get good results.
Hmm.
He's really not concerned with deliberation. He's concerned with process. And to some degree, he's the ancestor to the argument you find James Madison making in Federalist Number 10 about the advantage accrued from the multiplication of factions. Good results can be achieved without anyone intending them.
Hmm.
Any agent intending them. The designer of the system has to intend the good results. And so Machiavelli is looking at the struggle of the orders between the patricians and the plebeians and the subsequent class struggle at Rome, and he's arguing everything good at Rome came out of this. That's a new way of thinking about republicanism.
Dr. Paul Ray, Professor of History, Charles O. Lee, and Louise K. Lee Chair in Western Heritage at Hillsdale College. Dr. Ray, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Kevin Porteous from Hillsdale's Politics Department as we talked about LBJ's Great Society programs. Jeff Shepard discussed his brand new book with us, The Nixon Conspiracy, and we talked with Dr. Paul Ray from Hillsdale's History Department about Machiavelli. You can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts. Email us at radiohour@hillsdale.edu. The assistant producer of the show is Nate Esbenshade. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Redding Garden of Lights is taking place November 19th through December 31st at Turtle Bay's McConnell Botanical Gardens by the Sundial Bridge, featuring over 1 million lights, plus holiday-themed food, drinks, music, and so much more. Presented by Mercy Medical Center Redding. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market Street and Eureka Way next to Dutch Bros in downtown Redding has the perfect gift this holiday season. Car wash coupons, or choose from four different car wash packages. Car washes start at just $9, or you can choose from a variety of car wash packages. Buy five car wash packages and get one free, or buy 10 and get three free. Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market Street and Eureka Way in downtown Redding. Quick and clean.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to an state with no more homeless pets.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Auto Body. The auto repair industry is ever-changing, just like the automobile. Collision repair on today's vehicles requires an extensive investment in diagnostic equipment and training. The ability to scan the safety and electronic control systems after a collision is imperative. Coachmaster has made these investments. We have the technology. You can be assured that after a Coachmaster repair, your vehicle will be back to pre-loss condition. Upon delivery, your vehicle will be washed, vacuumed, and disinfected.
Remember Coachmaster on Eastside Road, serving the Reading community since 1969. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
With the coming of the holiday season, we would like to thank all of our customers, old and new, for trusting Coachmaster to take care of all of your collision repair needs. Our team would like to wish the community Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And Santa, we don't repair sleighs, so be careful. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
This is the Cigar of the Month from Tobacco and Brew, brought to you by Liga Privada. The Underground Sun Grown is the perfect balance of Nicaraguan long filler tobacco. Draped in a lovely Connecticut sun grown wrapper, this stick received a 92 rating. With hints of spice, wood, and espresso, this robust cigar ends on notes of cinnamon. Come down to the best cigar shop around, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Have you been putting off getting your colonoscopy due to COVID restrictions? Well, there's no better time than now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
Redding Garden of Lights is taking place November 19th through December 31st at Turtle Bay's McConnell Botanical Gardens by the Sundial Bridge, featuring over 1 million lights, plus holiday-themed food, drinks, music, and so much more. Presented by Mercy Medical Center Redding. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.